Walt Street headed high.
Arizona News Radio. A Tucson judge has ruled that gunman Gerald Loughner is not competent to stand trial for that shooting rampage in January that killed six and wounded Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. Giffords' colleague, Republican Congressman Jeff Flake.
I hope justice is done. Here's a guy who murdered six people and injured scores of others, and the effects of that shooting will reverberate for a long, long time.
The Arizona Supreme Court has ruled against convicted child killer Donald Beatty. His attorney had asked for a stay of today's execution. In a false complaint by a Palo Verde middle school student that he had been assaulted on campus by a man with a knife may get him in trouble.
If there's any message, I know this is the last day of school for a lot of the schools, but there will be repercussions.
Bob Baker, Arizona News Radio.
And this KFNX traffic report is brought to you by your Arizona Farmers Insurance agents. Westbound on the 10 right of the tunnel, you're going to find a collision there, so stay to the right to get by. Also, you're going to find a police motorcycle and a semi got in an accident. Westbound on the Red Mountain at 24th Street, the semi, we're being told, has jackknifed. So if you're in that area or you just approached it, stay to the left to get by. And are you saving as much as you could? See how your knowledgeable farmer's agent can save you money. Call Gabrielle Cudd at 480-635-8788. We are insurance. We are farmers.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. Upper 90s again tomorrow. We should see the century mark Friday and Saturday. But for the Memorial Day weekend, it looks like another one of those strong fronts. Breezy to windy at times. Sunday only low 90s. Mid-80s on Monday, and unfortunately that cooler air later next week will probably cause severe weather again in the Midwest. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
And currently at our downtown studios, we're sitting at 95 degrees. Next news in 30 minutes or when it breaks here on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
811 is the number you should call before you begin any digging project, even small jobs like planting trees or shrubs. Whether you're a homeowner or a professional excavator, one call to 811 gets underground utility lines marked for free. Utility lines can be buried in yards, under streets, alleys, and vacant land. If you hit an underground utility line, you can harm yourself or those around you, disrupt service to an entire neighborhood, and potentially be responsible for fines and repair costs. Know what's below. Call 811 before you dig. Brought to you by Southwest Gas.
This news report is brought to you by State Farm Insurance. Talk to an agent today about State Farm's new lower car insurance rates. Call an agent 24/7 or visit statefarm.com. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Simple Green, the original green cleaner, presents the Green Tip of the Week. This week's tip, make a change. Try to carpool or take public transportation to work, school, or shopping just one day per week. Or try riding your bike one day. You'll save money, fuel, and get some exercise. That's this week's Green Tip of the Week. Visit our website at simplegreen.com.
This is Legalese, where the law is always on your side. Now introducing your host, a longtime veteran of the courts, Dennis Willinchek.
This is Dennis Willinchek. Welcome to Legalese. We're on every Wednesday from 4 to 5, leading into the Lou Dobbs Show, and I'm your host. And today we're going to be talking about a topic that, quite honestly, is very confusing to me, as well as I'm sure a lot of people, and that's really the Arizona Medicaid program known as Access. And we'll be talking with some very educated guests about that, which I'll introduce in a moment. But basically, we're going to be talking today about the various cuts that are being proposed in that program. And we are here at 277-KFNX. That is 277-5369, should you wish to call in. Our guest today that we'll be talking with are Senator Nancy Bartow, who is in studio with us. Welcome, Senator.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Pleasure. And Senator Bartow is the chair of the Senate Health, I guess you call it the Health Care, let me get this straight here because I don't want to misstate this, the Senate Health Care and Medical Liability Committee, is that right?
We couldn't think of a longer name.
Yeah, it's a good name, though. And so we'll be talking with the senator, and also with us in studio with Senator Bartow is Representative Kate Brophy-McGee from District 11, who is a member of the Health and Human Services Committee of the Arizona House of Representatives, and we welcome you as well. Thank you for being here.
And thank you for inviting us.
Pleasure. All right, and then later on in the show, we'll be talking with Goldwater Institute economist Byron Schlomach, who will be in studio to discuss some of these same issues. Basically, Byron's position is, on behalf of the Goldwater Institute, that the state just doesn't have the money, and unfortunately that may be correct, to fund some of these wonderful programs that that we'd otherwise like to see. Let me just spend a minute, Senator Bartow and Representative McGee. Medicaid is a program which provides health care for the poor, basically, as best I can understand it, and costs the United States federal and state governments some $339 billion a year. And that figure has been climbing at a rate of approximately 8% annually. It's a shared program between the governments and the states. It's my understanding the states can opt out or elect not to be part of the program, but most of them don't, or all of them might not. Various states now are coming up with different programs to determine whether or not they will be part of this program, and are coming up with unique ways to deal with the program. And we'll talk about that also. But right now, Governor Jan Brewer and the Arizona legislature, well, actually, Governor Brewer has not signed off on this bill that I'm about to talk to. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that. But apparently the legislature approved of a bill that would cut about $500 million from the state's Medicaid program, the Access program. Is that right?
That's correct. And the governor has signed off on that budget bill. It was part of our budget package that allowed us to balance the budget without borrowing or doing any more gimmicks.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if she'd actually sign off on it because, as I said earlier, we'll be talking about a lawsuit that I noted was filed by Tim Hogan, who unfortunately couldn't be with us today. He said he would make it on another program, but he couldn't be here today physically and was caught up with something else. But he has filed a lawsuit that I'm sure you're probably familiar with, and it was recently filed, a petition for special action directly in the Arizona Supreme Court on the basis that the Supreme Court has original jurisdictions on actions compelling state officials to perform their duties. And the gravamen, the substance of that lawsuit, as best I understand it, I haven't had a chance to read it in full, but I have had a chance to take a quick look at it, and it appears that basically the gist of it is that it's claiming that the Proposition 204, which came into effect, its claim 2 years after Arizona voters had approved a constitutional amendment known as the Voter Protection Act to prevent the legislature from enacting legislation that defeated or otherwise frustrated the intent and purpose of voter-approved measures. He's claiming that the proponents of this Proposition 204 undertook a massive task, he says, of gathering signatures, campaigning for support, securing the belief that if it was approved by voters, that the proposition would not only provide the needed health care coverage, but would also enjoy the protection of the Arizona Constitution. And it did so for 11 years, where Arizonans with incomes less than the federal poverty level received health care benefits through Access. He claims in this special action that approximately 1.35 million individuals participate in the Access program, which is kind of amazing considering the population of Arizona. I mean,
it's a huge number, and it's between one out of every four or five of Arizonans.
That's incredible. And anyway, he goes on to basically say that facing a budget deficit, the governor and the legislature have decided, he claims, to ignore the mandate of that proposition that was passed many years ago. And in the recently concluded legislative session, the legislature enacted this Senate Bill 1619, which gives Access carte blanche authority to deny or terminate coverage for populations covered by that proposition. So basically, he's essentially wanting to do away with this this new piece of legislation, as best I can read it. Let me start with you, Senator Bartow. You were obviously part of the enactment of this legislation. So why don't you tell our listeners what this is all about and why it was necessary?
Well, it was necessary to make adjustments in the eligibility to our Access program because, frankly, we can't afford to cover that many individuals. And I guess the question that we're asking is whether or not the legislature violated the Prop 105 Voter Protection Act. And I would say definitively no. The state has a great case for defending our position based on the plain language of the proposition, which expanded the populations that would be covered by access. But we had to do it because it was unsustainable, and the general fund has been making up for the difference that the tobacco tax settlement and the tobacco tax has been primarily responsible for paying for this population. The general fund's been making up that difference to the tune of $700 million for years.
So why is that? Is the tobacco, the proceeds from the tobacco litigation, did it not turn out that these proceeds were sufficient, even though it was originally projected they would be?
Exactly. They haven't been nearly sufficient, even right
from the
start.
Is that because the costs are rising or because the original projection was wrong?
I think the projection was wrong. Costs have risen.
Yeah.
And I think people didn't want to acknowledge the fact that there was not going to be enough funding in the tobacco tax.
So, I mean, the bottom line is the money has to come from somewhere. Either we raise taxes or it's got to come from the prisons or someplace, right?
Correct. You can cut K-12 education. You can cut universities. I think another thing that maybe we all didn't count on is the enormous growth in the access population.
Yeah. As I said, we're talking with Representative Kate Brophy McGee, who's just speaking, as well as Senator Nancy Bartow, both of whom are involved heavily in the health care issues in the legislature. Let's talk for a second about what actually this legislation does, though. It's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the savings come from freezing enrollment for childless adults and others and cutting payments to hospitals and health care providers and implementing co-payments, and that these cuts would eliminate health insurance for an estimated 160,000 Arizona residents in the first year and upwards of 250,000 in total. Of course, hospitals are warning of drastic job cuts if these cuts are enacted and not turned around by the lawsuit. And the cuts are claimed to reduce what physicians are paid for services. So is this an accurate portrayal of what these cuts do?
Yes. Nobody is going to be thrown off immediately. It's going to be a freeze. So those that are already on the program will remain on the program until they no longer become eligible. So we're expecting about 150,000 people to basically fall off over the next year.
And what does that mean when you say fall off? What happens to these people?
Well, every few months, Arizona law demands that access redetermines eligibility for people. And sometimes when they look at their new income levels at that point in time, after 6 months to a year, they no longer are eligible to stay on the program.
All right. Well, we have just a short time before we have to take a break, but maybe one of you, maybe Representative Kate Brophy McGee, can tell us what is the difference between Medicaid and Medicare in a nutshell? Can you explain it to our listeners? It's a very complicated issue, but in a nutshell, what is the difference?
I would say that Medicare is the federal program for the elderly. Medicaid is the state program that we administer.
And is it on a poverty level? Is that the issue with Medicaid?
Medicaid populations are determined by, that's one of the measurements.
Okay.
We're one of the few states that include childless adults, that include and take it to as high a percentage of the federal poverty level, parents of children, uninsured children. We include a number of populations that many other states do not.
Yeah, the Arizona program is actually pretty generous when you look at some of the other states. Is that right?
I think there are only 7 states that provide the same level of coverage that we do.
Yeah.
If you look, for instance, at the 20% of our population is covered by Medicaid, but nationally only 15.8% are covered by Medicaid. That's an example of where we're out of whack.
All right. Well, we're going to take a brief break, and we'll be back with Representative Kate Brophy McGee and Senator Nancy Bartow talking about the Medicaid cuts.
First option lending, the people you going to use First Option's new no closing cost program. How about lowering your mortgage payment to save hundreds every month with no closing cost? Pull out the cash you need to pay off credit cards and other bills with no closing cost. Convert your adjustable rate mortgage to a low fixed rate. Convert your 30-year loan to a 15 and maybe save $100,000. You can even convert your 15-year loan to a 30 and pay no closing cost. Options are great. No cost options are even better. Call now. First Option Lending, 480-751-3400. 751-3400. That's 480-751-3400.
First Option Lending, the people you call first.
480-751-3400.
License 19017.
Since 1991, the law offices of Willinchek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Willinchek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Willinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810.
Do it because it's right for the country, and it helps America. It helps our national security. It will help us in the war on terror that you call countering violent extremism. Don't do it and then milk it because it's good for you. That's what he always does. He turns an issue into a way to burnish his own reputation.
Be a freedom czar. Listen to the Laura Ingraham Show every Monday through Friday starting at 6 a.m. on KFNX.
This is Dennis Willinchek. We're here on Legalese 4 to 5 every Wednesday. And we are talking this week about the Arizona Medicaid program, commonly known as ACCESS, and some of the cuts under recent legislation. We have with us in the studio Senator Nancy Bartow and Representative Kate Brophy McGee, both of whom are extremely knowledgeable and on relevant committees with respect to this. We were talking before we took the break about the differences between Medicare and Medicaid, and I want to ask both of you to comment on this. You were talking about it a little bit earlier, but in terms of the other states, today Arizona is a whipping post for lots of different issues, but it sounds like in this health care front for people on the poverty level that Arizona is not as bad as one would assume from what we hear in the outside media in terms of what we actually provide vis-a-vis the other states. Is that an accurate statement or not?
That's absolutely right, Dennis. Arizona has one of the richest Medicaid programs in the country. We're only one of six states that covers 100% of the poverty level, federal poverty level. And so Secretary Sebelius acknowledges that there are issues. And that's why we do have hope that she will grant this waiver, that we will be able to cut this eligibility population.
So, in other words, the federal government, as I understand it, the program is jointly funded by state and federal governments and is managed by the states. Is that right?
That's correct.
But in order to have this legislation go into effect, the state, i.e. Arizona, is required to get some kind of a waiver from the federal government, Secretary Sebelius. And you're saying now that you have reason to believe she'll probably do that.
Well, we're hopeful.
We have
reason to hope because we have implemented so many of the changes that they have already requested that Arizona make. And some of those are that we've already reduced our provider rates, and we've continued to cut their rates for the past 3 years, and we'll do that again this year in our budget. We've reduced non-mandated benefits. And now the only thing left for us to do without this flexibility that we're asking for is to reduce the population and eligibility.
What about some of these controversial aspects that are being talked about? I don't know if they're in the bill or not, but is there part of the bill that would penalize Medicaid recipients if they don't lose weight, for example, or quit smoking per their doctor's orders? Representative McGee?
Well, I wouldn't typify it or describe it as penalizing. There will be an extra fee charged to those individuals, and the statistic I can cite in support of doing something like that is that 15% of medical care recipients use 80% of the dollars. And if they are going to present as high risk, overweight, then there will be extra costs associated with their care, and we're asking that they contribute some of those.
We have a clip, if Wayne can play it there, a short clip from Monica Corey, who is the assistant director of Access, on this very issue. If do you have that keyed up, Wayne?
The behaviors in which we engage have a consequence on the cost of health care in America. There's plenty of research out there that shows that there is an undeniable link between obesity and the rising cost of medical care in the United States. Same with smoking. So let's see if we can engage the consumer at the individual level to do something about those issues to the extent that they're within their control.
Any other comments, Senator Bartow?
Well, I think states and, insurance companies and the health care industry in general has to start expecting more of the health care consumer. They have to have some responsibility going forward. It makes sense. But, we're asking for other ways to be more flexible with our access budget that don't have so much to do with that. But they're just common sense issues, such as asking for them to increase a copay or to have a no-show fee for missed appointments.
Mm.
Our existing waiver prohibits these kind of cost-sharing options. We need the flexibility to be able to fund the program adequately going forward.
So if there's a way that you two, Senator, Representative, can summarize maybe for our listeners the most drastic type cuts that this bill accomplishes would be basically borne out to the patient or to the medical provider or to the hospital. Is there one particular group that takes the biggest brunt of this?
I would say that the hospitals and the providers have already been significantly cut and will be cut more. Much of what the hospitals contend with is unreimbursed care. People who walk into an emergency room, thereby obtaining the most expensive care,
right,
are not obligated to pay. I mean, they're supposed to, but they get the care regardless.
And isn't that why the emergency rooms are just packed with
exactly,
people?
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, my son, in fact, who's here in the studio, was having a stomach ache, and we went to bring him to the emergency room recently, and it was hours on hours just sitting, and the place was packed. And my wife commented that this is probably just what's going on. People are using this as their main health care provider, right?
Well, I think what the problem is that the consumer, whether the access patient, thinks of health care as free.
Yeah.
Because of they have no investment in it, they have no payment in it. And health care isn't free, and we know that.
Right.
But that is the mindset that has to change. It costs money.
Yeah.
And once they start using that kind of thinking, then maybe we can re-educate them to go to urgent care centers, to go to their doctor, to take more responsibility in how they seek care, how they access care.
Because I would assume the emergency care is probably the most expensive form of care, wouldn't it be?
If you go to the emergency room with an earache, it'll cost $500 or $600,
right,
as opposed to going to your doctor.
And what your point is, and it's very well taken, a lot of these people don't care. They don't know and they don't care, and they're not getting regular treatment or care, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But as for it impacting people that are the most vulnerable, I think that is just not the case. The budget has made sure, and I think Access is going to ensure that the most vulnerable and the seriously mentally ill and disabled will still receive coverage. And I would just caution people to not believe some of the scare, the scare tactics used, that we're going to be cutting off
Metascare,
the blind and the disabled from this coverage, because the governor has made sure that is going to be our priority.
Well, something has to give, and it's always hard to cut anything, obviously. Let me play a couple of other clips that we have from the assistant director of Access. The next one is on matching funds, and our question was, what percentage do Arizona taxpayers contribute toward our Medicaid system versus the federal government's contribution? Here is her answer.
Medicaid is a federal-state partnership. Each state has to put in its share of the cost of the program. The federal government then matches that. So in the state of Arizona, the state's share is 33% of the cost of the program, and the federal government pays the rest. The problem for the state of Arizona is finding the $1.
Any comments on that?
What I could point out is that between Access and the Department of Health, DES, the state match for Medicaid and state-only programs has grown to about $3.6 billion. And of that, over $3 billion, almost $3.1 billion, comes from the general fund. So if you add in the federal 2-to-1 match, our Medicaid program costs over $10.8 billion.
From the state?
Yes.
And so the federal contribution to that, if stated correctly, would be our one-third approximately, right?
I think 10.8 is the total cost of the program.
Oh, total cost.
I apologize, yes.
Okay, all right. And so the problem is with rising health care costs, without raising taxes, there's just no way to deal with it, right? I mean, it has to come from somewhere, obviously.
Well, our revenues are down to the general fund over 40% or $4 billion from where they were projected to be just 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
There's no money.
Yeah, there's no money. That's the bottom line. We'll be back in a moment after these messages. This is Dennis Wolinchek on Legalese.
I'm Steve Malzberg. Listen to me from 1 to 3 every weekday afternoon on the 50,000-watt Voice of the Valley, KFNX, News Talk Radio 1100, Phoenix.
CNN Radio. I'm Barbara Hall. Missouri is getting slammed by more severe storms. In the town of Sedalia, there was a lot of damage reported, but Sheriff Kevin Bond says, thankfully, no injuries.
There's about 40 units in the trailer park. There is a second smaller trailer park, Hillcrest Trailer Park, that has about 20 units that also received damage as well.
Tornado watches and warnings spread from South Texas to Cleveland, Ohio. There have been at least 48 separate reports of tornado damage today. The man accused of killing six people in his failed assassination attempt on Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords won't stand trial anytime soon. Today, a federal judge in Phoenix found Jared Lee Loeffner not competent to stand trial. Brian David Mitchell has been sentenced to life in prison without parole for the abduction and rape of Elizabeth Smart. She was kidnapped from her bedroom in June 2002. This is CNN Radio.
Arizona News Radio. A Tucson judge has ruled that gunman Jared Loeffner is not competent to stand trial for that shooting rampage in January that killed six and wounded Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. Giffords' colleague, Republican Congressman Jeff Flake.
I hope justice is done. Here's a guy who murdered six people and injured scores of others, and the effects of that shooting will reverberate for a long, long time.
The Arizona Supreme Court has ruled against convicted child killer Donald Beatty. His attorney had asked for a stay of today's execution. And a false complaint by a Palo Verde middle school student that he had been assaulted on campus by a man with a knife may get him in trouble.
If there's any message, I know this is the last day of school for a lot of the schools, but there will be repercussions.
Bob Baker, Arizona News Radio.
And this KFNX traffic report is brought to you by Hammermill Paper. 16th Street and Camelback has a collision, so does southbound of the Price Ready University. That one's on the right shoulder, and we still have that accident involving a police motorcycle in a semi that is jackknifed. Westbound of the Red Mountain, right at 24th Street, stay to the left to get by there. Hammermill Copy Plus Paper, guaranteed 99.99% jam-free, just $2.99 per ream at Staples after easy rebate, in-store only, limit 2 ends May 28th. Hammermill, no worries.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center, upper 90s again tomorrow. We should see the century mark Friday and Saturday, but for the Memorial Day weekend, it looks like another one of those strong fronts, breezy to windy at times, Sunday only low 90s, mid-80s on Monday, and unfortunately that cooler air later next week will probably cause severe weather again in the Midwest. Jim Howell, KFNX Newstalk Radio, 1100.
And currently at our downtown studios, we're sitting at 95 degrees. Next news in 30 minutes. And when it breaks here on KFNX Newstalk Radio, 1100.
The Lars Larson Show is on the air.
You know, the president is pretty shameless. He wants those Latino votes, and he's willing to promise them almost anything. Instead of standing up there and saying, this is how I'm going to get Americans employed in jobs, we're going to get rid of the illegal aliens in this country. Instead of that, he says he's effectively going to sell U.S. citizenship for $6,000. I wouldn't sell my U.S. citizenship for $6 million.
Lars Larson, weeknights at 10 on KFNX.
Tired of loose, uncomfortable teeth, or do you just miss the smile that you used to have? Dr. Stephen Conrad has been helping people regain their oral health and self-confidence with dental implants. Practicing dentistry for over 20 years, he has always enjoyed making smiles beautiful again, most times in just one day. Dr. Conrad is right here in Phoenix. Discover the ease and value of dental implants. Call Dr. Conrad at 602-955-8760. That's 955-8760. Or go to phoenixcaringdentist.com.
London Gold, it's the best.
Hey, sis.
So what are you going all gonzo about?
Well, Sharon's going to be jumping a jet for a couple of months back in Boca on business, and I had this dream, and I'm convinced that she's got to be wearing my rock or I'm toast.
Okay, slow down. You want to simplify that for me?
All right, I'm going for the gold. I'm going to ask Sharon to marry me before she leaves on her two-month training class. But I got to find an engagement ring, a beautiful, seductive, you can't say no kind of ring. And you're going to help me.
Oh, is that all?
Well, that and I don't want to run all over town, and I'm not made of money, you know.
Oh, I know. But you want diamonds, lots of rings to choose from.
Yeah, yeah, I want that.
Then I know just the place. Because if you're going for the gold, you got to go to the gold, London Gold.
For over 30 years, London Gold has been offering couples a wide array of diamond engagement and wedding rings that not only reflect the timeless beauty of their love, but an enduring value as well.
London Gold.
This is Dennis Wolinchek. We're here Wednesday, 4 to 5, on Legalese, and we're back again talking about Medicaid and the Medicaid cuts. And joining us today is Senator Nancy Bartow, who's chairman of the, again, I'm going to misstate it, but I'll just call it the Health Care Reform Committee for my purposes because the other name is too long.
That works.
Okay. And we have Representative Kate Brophy McGee, and who is a member of the Health and Human Services Committee. In the House of Representatives, and joining us now is Goldwater Institute economist Byron Schlomach. I hope I pronounced that right.
You got it.
Because everybody butchers my name. But and basically your position on the topics we've been talking about, Byron, as I understand it, is basically we don't have the money, so how do we, and all of you can join in on this, how do we determine the priorities in a situation where there just isn't enough money to go around?
Well, that's what a legislature is for, is to set priorities.
But with so many initiatives, is the legislature able to do that?
Well, no. Effectively, no. It's been very limited in its ability to set priorities. Now, look, I mean, if the legislature wants to, it could vote tomorrow to eliminate Medicaid in Arizona altogether. And by the way, that would be completely legal under the current lawsuit against the legislature.
Well,
basically, it's an all or nothing.
Yeah.
The way Proposition 204 put the legislature in a corner.
Well, state participation, as I understand it, in Medicaid has always been voluntary. Is that right?
That's exactly right.
But all states have participated since 1982 when Arizona formed the Access Program. Some states now, as I understand it, are incorporating the use of private companies to administer portions of the Medicaid benefits. Some states, such as Rhode Island, as I understand it, have now taken the position that just give us a lump sum of money for 5 years and we'll figure out where it goes, and it's our business, and we'll leave you alone, federal government. You know, there's lots of different options here, but I guess the bottom line is this new legislative enactment cuts the line on some of the spending and tries to educate people in a positive way, it sounds like. Obviously, nobody wants their ox gored, so, you know, you have people clamoring for all kinds of special interests. We just don't have the money is your position, but I guess what I was trying to get to is, shouldn't we prioritize medical care for indigent people as a main priority in a society?
Well, and the state has. If you look at the state's budget, about 40% of it is in K through 12 education. The next biggest category, 30%, is in healthcare. And quite frankly, if you look at the all funds budget, it's even bigger than 30% because it includes the federal money. So we have put a high priority on health care. The next 10% is universities. There's another 10% for prisons. And then the last 10% goes to everything else, including the governor's office, the attorney general, and all that. So,
my review of the statistics is that, and you guys tell me if this is right from your perspective, but I read somewhere that one-third of children and over half, that's 59% of low-income children, are insured through Medicaid. Is that accurate from your knowledge?
Yes. I wouldn't be surprised if it were higher.
Yeah.
But, one of the issues, and something cited in the lawsuit, several individuals with high medical costs are cited in the lawsuit. One of the issues we need to understand is the fact that medical costs are very high, and they've been growing faster than costs anywhere else on average in our economy. And why is that? Well, part of the reason that is because when you can charge government any amount and keep increasing it by 10% every year or 7 or 8% every year, and the government automatically increases how much they pay you, guess what? You're gonna do whatever you can get away with. Medical costs are high partly because government is paying so many of them, and as well as other third-party payers like insurance. But and so what the, it's a circular thing. So we go out and we fund health care, and then it goes up in cost very fast. So we fund it more, and then it goes up even faster, and we fund it. But that's what we've been doing for years. We're chasing our tails. And it's this kind of measure where we back off and we say, look, people have to be responsible for themselves, at least at a higher level.
That's
the only way we can really make things affordable for everybody.
Yeah, I agree. But we're talking here about all taxpayers paying for these programs for indigent people.
Right.
And the question I guess some would ask is, are some of these indigent people probably getting better health care than a lot of people who are paying for the bill for it, who are not at the pure poverty level?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because the pure poverty level, as I understand it, is something really ridiculous, like your total assets must be below $2,000, which is incredible, to receive Medicaid in most states. It's my understanding your total assets must be below $2,000. And in most states, or a lot of states, Medicaid beneficiaries are required to pay a small fee or copayment. Now, in Arizona, Senator Bartow, is that true? Or was it true before, and is it going to be true under this new legislation that there will be copay?
Well, that's the plan. We'd like to institute some copays and the no-show fees. And we'd like to even institute some premiums, which, it underscores the point that we have to ask for a waiver that the state is broke and can't afford our present program. It underscores the point that we need more flexibility, which, we had some legislation this session that would have allowed states that flexibility. If we'd gone for the health care compact, which allows states to get their Medicaid dollars as a block grant going forward. States need to manage their programs in the way that they best can with the finances available to them.
Well, this lawsuit filed by the Arizona Center for Law and the Public Interest really is interesting. And I know, obviously, being the legislature on sort of one side of it, as is Representative McGee. But why don't you talk to us a little bit about this, Byron? I think you have some knowledge of this lawsuit. I mean, tell us about a little bit of the issues, because they are interesting.
Well, I mean, the main issue is that we have this the Taxpayer Protection Amendment, that Proposition 105 that passed in 1998, and Proposition 204 was passed after that.
Is that the Voter Protection Act?
The Voter Protection Act.
And
that
what is
was
that?
Proposition 105. What that basically says is if the voters pass an initiative and the legislature cannot amend it. In essence, that's what it says. So if the voters have committed taxpayers to pay for a certain program, the legislature can't rescind that. Well, and then Proposition 204 is that the proposition that guaranteed that everybody up to the poverty level, the federal poverty level, would get covered under Medicaid. Now, I don't remember exactly what the federal minimum is, but it's less than 50% of the federal poverty level that you have to cover adults.
Okay, but in a nutshell, before we take our break, what is the issue then in this lawsuit?
Well, Proposition 204 guaranteed that a certain number of people in the state would be covered by Medicaid, and the legislature basically said, no, we're going back to the federal minimum that we have to cover to have a Medicaid program and have the federal match. And that'll take, what, is it 100,000 adults, I believe, off the Medicaid rolls?
Oh, well, I think maybe more. Maybe yeah. 160.
Oh, okay. That sounds right.
So that's in conflict, sometime. You're saying?
So that's in conflict with Proposition 204, which the argument in the lawsuit is, no, wait a minute. The Voter Protection Act says you can't do this. You can't modify something that we've approved. And that's the short of it. You have to spend the money. You have to figure out a way to get the money. Cut something else or raise taxes is basically what.
And real quickly, we have less than a minute. Representative McGee, is there anything else we can cut?
No, we've already sold our buildings and borrowed, even though our Constitution says we're not supposed to. We've done everything.
So how does this lawsuit come out? It's kind of an interesting situation. There's nothing more to cut.
We've also raised taxes.
Where does the money come from? Taxes, I guess.
But we've already done that, a 1 cent sales tax a couple years ago.
So. Be interesting how this lawsuit turns out. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll talk about that and other issues here on Legalese. This is Dennis Wolinchek, KFNX.
Since 1991, the law offices of Wolinchek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Wolinchek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Wolinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810.
Business owners, if you would like to create a loyal audience of raving fans, text Mojo to 411-247 and turn prospects into paying customers. Grow your business with video marketing. Grab your free video consumer report and discover 8 critical videos every business should have. 10 reasons why every business needs to use video to survive in this economy. Take advantage of this free report by texting Mojo to 411-247 or go to mojovideomarketing.com/free.
Hi, Greg Schulte here from my friends at Legends Cadillac. I happened to take a road trip up to North Scottsdale the other day, and folks, I was amazed at the Cadillac inventory at Legends. Over 50 Escalades, ESVs, and EXTs in stock. Every color and option package available. This special allotment was brought in because of the newly announced program of 0% financing for up to 60 months and 1.9% up to 72 months. So don't settle for anything less than your dream car. Whether it be the world-class SRX or the highly rated CTS, Legends has it all. Low financing, great lease programs, and the finest selection at a great location. Looking for a great low-mileage used car or SUV? Legends has 100 frontline, perfect low-mileage vehicles. Make sure you ask about GM's waiver on your first 3 payments on certified used cars and trucks for the month of May. Legends, it's like no place else, online at legendscadillac.com.
We're back on Legalese. This is Dennis Wolinchek every Wednesday from 4 to 5 talking about interesting legal issues in our state. One of them, the Arizona Medicaid cuts and a recent lawsuit filed by the Arizona Center for Law and the Public Interest. Basically, a petition for special action against the legislature and the governor for enacting the cuts that we're here talking with Senator Bartow and Representative McGee from Senate and House, respectively, and Byron Schlomach from the Goldwater Institute about these cuts. And the big problem here, as I see it, guys, is, as you've said before here on the show, but for those who just tuned in, basically we've got a lawsuit here that raises some interesting issues. about whether these cuts can occur. But your point of view as legislators is, well, where's the money going to come from? Somebody's going to complain whatever we do. Care to comment on the state's position or who you think wins this lawsuit?
Well, I would like to think that the state will win this lawsuit. I know it needs to be decided by the courts, but it centers around the use of the word available sources, not just tobacco settlement monies, but shall be supplemented as necessary by any other available sources. And I think
what are you reading from now? Is this the new bill?
The language in Prop 204.
Oh,
that it does in fact allow us the flexibility to say,
okay,
we don't have available funds above and beyond the tobacco settlement.
So you're saying there really is no conflict because the nature of Proposition 204, which is claimed to be in conflict with this bill, isn't really in conflict because its language about available funds has not been violated.
Correct. And Proposition 204 identified to voters what seemed like a very good purpose, providing insurance, health care coverage, the tobacco settlement monies as the primary source, which is a great use of tobacco settlement monies.
Yeah.
But the general fund contributions have soared, and it's taking away from other priorities that are required of us to fund education, for one, prisons.
And so how are these cuts decided? Senator Bartow, can you comment on that?
Well, we do it out in the open,
yeah,
in public hearings. And we listened to voters, and I think they spoke loud and clear that they wanted education to be funded. That was a priority. They passed the proposition last year that expanded the sales tax, and we listened. We decide those in many different ways in conjunction with the House, with the governor, and with each of the members on where our funds should go.
I mean, I would assume that there's a lot of discussion, as you say, about, you know, just which cuts would be the least severe, I assume, and would hurt the least, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
You can't let prisoners out. You have to fund public safety. You have to fund education, higher ed, and
But, I mean, even when you get into the access program itself and you're trying to cut areas, that's got to be a difficult decision-making process.
Yes, it is.
So,
by the way, I would point out that's one of the issues I have with Proposition 204 and the argument in the lawsuit, which is, on the one hand, yes, you have this proposition, the Voter Protection Act, in the Constitution, but what's being argued here is basically that Proposition 204 itself has become an amendment of the Constitution.
It isn't
sacrosanct, despite the fact that the legislature is given the authority to appropriate in the Constitution.
Yeah.
And Proposition 204 itself is in statute. It is not in the Constitution.
Right. Good point. Before we go to it, let me play a couple of clips again from the assistant director of Access, Monica Corey, who couldn't be with us today but was nice enough to be interviewed over the telephone. One of the questions that we asked is, when will Arizona Medicaid be out of this crisis? I want to get her take on it and then all of you here. So if we can play that, that's clip number 8.
The biggest issue causing the uptake in the Access program is jobs. When we saw the downturn in the economy, we saw our enrollment go up. The state of Arizona has lost over 300,000 jobs. It has been one of the hardest hit states in the country. And some people say, well, that means all the more we should be funding a program like Medicaid. The problem is that when we lose jobs, we also lose the revenue from income taxes related to those jobs. As the unemployment rate has gone up, the access load has gone up, and the revenues coming into the general fund have decreased by 34%. There isn't the money to sustain all of the core functions that state government is responsible for. So economic recovery and job creation are really fundamentally what gets people off of our program.
Yeah. Any comments on that by anybody here?
Well, go ahead.
Well, what I'd like to point out is that with the $510 million in cuts that we have applied for, even if they're granted, and the lawsuit is dismissed, we will still be providing more generous coverage than the national average.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the flexibility that we're asking for as part of this is so that we can provide for the truly needy, the disabled, the vulnerable in our society. And the legislature has provided the governor with very broad authority to structure these reductions as compassionately as possible and really focus on our most vulnerable.
Yeah, well said.
If we were just holding even in the healthcare area with our benefits and everything, you wouldn't expect to see continued job growth in the healthcare industry. But in fact, you have seen. There has been no recession in the healthcare industry in any state. I think the unemployment rate among doctors has never been above 2%.
Mm-hmm.
So if, in fact, people were suffering that much in healthcare compared to the rest of the economy, you'd at least see a flattening in that area, but that's not happened in healthcare.
Yeah, let's play clip number 5 on how hospitals will be affected. We're talking here with Monica Corey, Assistant Director of Access, on the clip.
The overall proposal includes a reduction in provider rates. The hospitals are also calculating losses from people who might have been insured by Access who no longer may be. So to them, it increases the level of uncompensated care. Because Medicaid serves as an important payer source to the provider community. And that definitely is a loss.
Mm. So, I mean, she's saying, as I hear it, that there will be a hit on hospitals, obviously. Is that your take on it?
Well, there's no doubt there will be a hit. The question is, what is the effect of that hit? And that's an open question. But it doesn't matter. I think the senator and representative could point out that it doesn't matter what the economy is doing. The hospitals and providers have been down at the legislature saying they haven't been getting enough money, right? Yet every time you turn around, there's a new hospital springing up somewhere. If they've been so poor, why have they been putting up hospitals right and left?
Well, and, I don't know. Maybe.
And so you have to wonder, is this really an issue of making somebody who's poor, or is it an issue of making somebody who's very rich less rich?
Well, I think the issue, I think, for most people listening is which recipients are going to be affected, period.
No, that's true.
And I would really characterize, I appreciate your comments, but I would describe it differently. I think these cuts to Access, because the healthcare industry has grown out, and you heard the clip where they talked about the growth in the Access populations, more and more people accessing healthcare, generally through the most expensive way possible, the emergency room,
right.
That with these cuts coming as quickly as they're coming, it is going to create kind of a mini or micro recession within the hospital industry. And I can talk specifically to John C. Lincoln in my neighborhood, which has an enormous excess population. They're going to be cutting $35, $40 million and tons of people off their payrolls.
Hmm.
So ER use is going to go up, and again, that's a huge problem for the hospitals because it's uncompensated care.
But part of this legislation, again, is to discourage the use of the emergency room as the primary facility of care, right?
Well, one of the things that we've applied for is emergency room copays, but quite typically people will seek emergency room care because they can either the payment will be waived or they'll be billed and can pay it later, as opposed to going to a provider where they have to pay cash on the barrel.
All right, we're going to have to wrap this up soon, so let me just ask you guys in the little time we have left, where do we go from here? What do you see happening in terms of this lawsuit and in terms of the legislation? Let me play Monica Corey's clip very quickly, last clip.
This is a publicly funded program, and the extent to which people want a program like this to continue to be funded and to serve the needs of particular individuals is ultimately a decision that's made by the voters. Elections mean something, and elections have consequences. even though some advocates have been talking about, well, we voted for the expansion of access back in Prop 204, that may be true, but there wasn't a recession at that time. And it's hard to say whether voters would want to see taxes raised, whether they would want to see other areas of government squeezed in order to fund the Medicaid program. So it's a delicate balance.
Any final comments from our guests here? About a minute?
Well, I think that we have to acknowledge that voters, when they passed Prop 204, passed it thinking that the tobacco tax was going to pay for that. And I think they understand where the legislature is at and yeah. that we need a change in how we fund health care in this country and make it more proactive for the consumer and more free market in order to control costs.
All right. We've been talking with Senator Nancy Bartow, Representative Brophy McGee, and Byron Schlomach from the Goldwater Institute. And we thank you all for being with us, and we'll be back next week on Legalese.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's always good to have someone you can depend on. If you're a homeowner age 62 or older who is considering a reverse mortgage, it's even better when that person has the knowledge and experience to help with your particular situation. You can find that person at MetLife Bank. Our reverse mortgage consultants are prepared to help you with every step in the loan process, from your initial questions through your loan closing. So if you're a homeowner age 62 or older, call MetLife Bank today. We'll help you determine if a reverse mortgage is right for you. MetLife Bank is a MetLife company, and MetLife has been a trusted name for more than 140 years. We'll be there when you need us.
Call Brian Bellamini, your local MetLife Bank reverse mortgage consultant, at 602-509-3366 to learn more. That's 602-509-3366. 602-509-3366.
All loans are subject to property approval. Certain conditions and fees apply. Mortgage financing provided by MetLife Bank N.A. Equal Housing Lender.
KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
News, weather, and traffic.
Cave Creek, Phoenix. A division of Premier Radio Stations, LLC.